Hello and welcome to Bowery Poetry Speaks, an audio series of talks and performances from our special Bowery perspective. At Bowery, we start every event with an honor native land statement. We would like to acknowledge that Bowery Poetry Club rests on the traditional lands and waters of the Lenape people, and we give respect to the Lenape and their elders past, present, and future by speaking in the Lenape language, Anushik, which means thank you and welcome. Anushik.
In this episode, host Bailey Wolf speaks with Armenian Cypriot author Nora Najarian about her literary work, cross-cultural experiences, and identity as a multilingual writer.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Bowery Poetry Speaks. I'll be your host today, Bailey Wolf, and I'm joined today by Armenian Cypriot poet and author Nora Najarian. Nora, thank you so much for joining us. Would you mind to just introduce yourself for our audience, maybe a bit about where you're from and what written forms you work with?
So, Bailey, I was born in Cyprus, which is an island in the Mediterranean Sea and is also an EU member state, but my roots are Armenian, meaning that I am an Armenian of the diaspora. My grandparents came to Cyprus from Asia Minor in the 1920s as refugees. I write poetry and short fiction, and sometimes it's difficult to distinguish between the two because my prose can also be very lyrical. My microfiction or short stories are almost prose poems, which essentially appear as prose but read like poetry.
That's fascinating. So when did you get started with writing, and was there any sort of inspiration that kind of started that for you?
Yeah, like most writers, my love of writing was preceded by love of reading. I read anything I could get my hands on as a child and later as a teenager, literally immersing myself in the world of books. I read the Brontes, I read Jane Austen, I read Baudelaire, I read Kafka. And I wrote short stories as a teenager. My first attempts were probably not very good because I hadn't really found my voice and was simply imitating the greats, the writers that I truly admired. I would say that I found my voice in my mid-20s when I started experimenting with poetry, and the poems I wrote felt as if they were mine and no one else's. That's when I knew that I had become me. I had become a poet.
Yes, thank you. Finding yourself in literature, of course, is important. Now, as I understand, you're from Cyprus, but you've traveled quite a bit and attended university in the UK. So I'm curious about your experience as a polyglot and maybe a traveler, and how this might impact your work or how this has inspired you.
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. Multilingualism has always been something of a blessing for me because it has affected the way I see the world and the way I respond to it. In fact, it has opened up worlds in terms of writing. So I grew up speaking Armenian at home, Greek with the outside world in Cyprus. I learned English at school as a foreign language, and French and German as additional foreign languages when I was in secondary school. I have to say that most or all of my education from the age of about 12 was in English. And I also, as you mentioned earlier, went to university in England. And yet, my mother tongue is Armenian. But this is a language that I don't often write in. I sometimes think in English, at other times in Armenian. And on occasion, a phrase may come out that isn't purely this or that, but a translation or mistranslation from another language that I know. And that's when interesting things start to happen.
That's interesting. Are there any literary scenes, particularly in Cyprus or perhaps other places where you've lived or traveled, that you're most involved with? And how does this impact your work?
The literary scene in Cyprus is constantly changing and growing, and yet it is still quite limited compared to bigger countries. Basically, it's divided between Greek-speaking and Turkish-speaking poets and writers. But there is a growing community of Anglophone writers. When I started writing seriously about 20 years ago, there was hardly anyone in Cyprus who wrote directly in English. And now there are quite a few. As a poet and writer who writes both in English and Greek, and sometimes in Armenian, I've taken part in bi-communal events, that is, say, events for writers from both sides of the divided island. And I've also represented Cyprus at festivals abroad. Now, the interesting thing is that in the last couple of years during the pandemic, physical isolation brought about the need for me to connect with writers from abroad. And it became almost my only means of keeping sane. This connection, even though virtual, kept me going, and I'm still in touch with people I met online who are part of these foreign literary scenes, if I can call them that.
Thank you for that. That's definitely interesting. I'm sure a lot of people can relate, as the past few years have been entirely online for everyone. Now, if I may, I'd like to hear maybe a little bit of your poetry. I know that you've prepared some things to read for us today.
Yes. So I chose to read first a poem called Iksuarpok, which is a very unusual title for a poem. In fact, it's an Inuit word, and I have to explain the meaning before I read the poem. It's an Inuit word meaning the impatient excitement for a visit that makes you look out of the window countless times in the hope of seeing your guest arrive. So I chose to read this poem first because it illustrates what I was saying earlier about my interest in language, but also because it's one of the most optimistic poems I've ever written. And ironically, it was written while I had COVID last year, and it went on to be a finalist in the 2021 Miss Lexia poetry competition. Iktsuarpok. I found a word and I'm riding a wild white woe. No, I found a word which is a window, and there's snow outside. I found this word for you, and because I'm waiting, and because sometimes the hour takes too long, I found this word without warning for warmth, but you will not be late, I know. I found a special word for the naked hooves galloping on the carpet, and somewhere else, life is orderly. No, it is rare to find a word I can't even say out loud that describes how this room feels right now. I found the word which starts here and ends when you arrive. I found a word which exists because you do. There is another word for waiting, and this o'clock strikes as your feet sink in soft snow and the door opens, your smile a blizzard. I want to kiss the surprising mouth in your hello.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I know you already mentioned a bit this poem being inspired by your being multilingual and interest in other languages, but were there any other things that inspired this? Or perhaps maybe you could tell us how you came across this Inuit word and how this inspired you to create a poem on it.
Yeah, so how I came across this Inuit word, I took part in a workshop which had to do with multilingualism and using a word which you've never heard of before as a starting point for a poem. And I Googled or I found a site which had a number of words that I'd never heard of before in my life. And because Inuit is a language that I absolutely know nothing about, I kind of latched onto this word because it also sounded so beautiful and interesting. And when I read the meaning of this word, I thought, this is the word that I'm going to pick. And so this is how it started. And as I said, it was at a time when I was in isolation with COVID and probably looking out of the window countless times and hoping for something exciting to happen. So this is how it came about.
That's excellent. While we're at it, why don't we hear another one? I know that you have another poem prepared for us.
Yes, I'd like to share a poem that deals with my Armenian identity and was written and published earlier this year. Now, the interesting thing about this poem is that it's one long sentence. So it's quite hard to read out because I have to breathe while I'm reading it out. but it's also very moving. I've heard many people comment on it online and others that it deals with the tragedy of the Armenian people, and it tells the truth, but it tells it slant. Yes, it's one of my favorites of my recent poems. Let's put it that way. It's called Although. Although we can still talk about it as survivors do, and all the faces in the photos are dead, as if the photos have been ripped or burnt to ashes, collected in envelopes and sealed and sent to lost relatives, there is always the feeling, that gut feeling, that we were never told enough, or that we didn't resist enough, or weren't enough. And these people walking across a desert and sometimes on waves like Jesus, proving that they could, like he could, cross over borders where people pinpointed them and pointed at them and couldn't pronounce their long names, even if their lives were basically the same, except for the drowning, that terrible drowning the papers wrote about. I know all about it. Believe me, my mouth is ash.
Thank you. Hearing it as just one long run-on sentence definitely changes the feeling of the poem. Was that intentional or something that you had in mind when you began writing, trying to evoke a certain feeling with writing it as one individual sentence? Or was there something else that inspired that?
I think when you try to explain a tragedy or moments in history that other people may not have experienced, it always takes that energy out of you, I find. It's an experience that perhaps others have not had. And when you try to explain it, you become almost breathless. I think I was trying to recreate that breathlessness that I've often felt trying to explain things to people who have asked me questions or who may have wanted to know more about my history. Yeah, I think that's basically how this poem came about. And also, there are some parallels in this poem with the Holocaust. And I've had many Jewish friends throughout my life. And I feel that Armenian and Jewish history has a lot in common. And the references to ash and we were never enough and all these phrases that could deal with not just Armenian and Jewish, but, you know, many peoples in throughout history who have maybe not had the voice to express what they went through.
Yes, thank you for explaining a little bit more about that. It definitely has to be hard to write about and read, but I appreciate you sharing that. On the subject of you writing a little bit about your heritage and things of that sort, I know that you also do some writing in Armenian and Greek, along with English. Do you find that the language that you write in may impact your process or the themes that you might include in these poems?
Yeah, the language that I write in sometimes plays a part in the themes that I include. For instance, when I'm writing in Armenian, there is always a haunting melancholy, which is an essential part of the poem. And I believe it has its roots in the tragic history of the Armenian people, as I was saying before. A little bit later, I'm going to be reading a poem of mine in Armenian. But first, let me just say a few things about the process of writing a poem. In general, it can vary a great deal depending on the mood I'm in. I've learned through the years that there is no real perfect way to write. I do think it is important to pay attention, though, to pay attention to detail, to pay attention to the nuances of language, to pay attention to the white space on the page, and above all, to make sure that the poem is doing something, saying something that you really feel passionately about. Otherwise, it's not doing such a great job. I'd like to move on with a poem of mine, which is called When You Return to Ashtarak. First, I'm going to read it in Armenian and then in English, so you can hear the sound of Armenian as well. It's a very musical language, and the poem deals with the return to the motherland, namely Armenia, for all Armenians, I suppose, and also with coming to terms with your identity. Երբ աշտարակ վերաթարնաս, կանքնե կամուրջին վրա եւ քու ոսկորներու ծուզերուն ընդմեջ են ունգնտրե մեր բաբերուն լրությունը։ Երկե, երկե, եւ արտընծուր քարերը, նահատակներուն հոգիները, քեդն ու երկինքը, մեր լեզվով երկե այդ կարմիր եւ նարնչակույն թրջուններուն։ Երկե այդ թարնանուշ բարերով եւ հպարտարի կրկներքով, փաստելով թե կհիշես ովը լալըդ։ Կանգնե կամուրջին վրա եւ ունգնտրե մեր բաբերուն անթորը, հու ոսկորներուդ ծուծին ընդմեջ են։ Երբ վերադարձիդ երկես կասախ քեդին, հիշե թե ով ես թուն։ When you return to Ashtarak, stand on the bridge and listen to the silence of your ancestors in the marrow of your bones. Sing, sing and wake up the stones, the souls of the dead, the river, the skies. Sing to those red and orange birds in our language. Sing those bittersweet words and proud refrains to show them you remember who you are. Stand on the bridge and listen to the silence of our ancestors in the marrow of your bones. Remember who you are as you sing to the river Kasach when you return.
Wow, thank you so much for reading that. I know you spoke before a bit about that representing a return to the motherland and you coming to terms with maybe your own identity and things of that sort. Do you find that this is often a theme in your work, maybe trying to pin down a certain nationality or a certain heritage that you identify closely with?
Yeah, I've always had issues with identity because I'm neither nor. I've always felt as if I'm an outsider here and there and everywhere. So I suppose my poetry or my writing has become my home and my voice. Irrespective of the language that I write in, I'm always saying, I'm here, this is who I am, and this is where I come from, and this is where I'm going. Yeah, it's very difficult to explain how I feel, who I am, and where I belong. It's very difficult. I'm torn between identities, nationalities, and languages. It's a very strange existence, but it's wonderfully inspiring as a writer.
Of course, thank you. That's beautifully put, really. I know that you also, along with writing poems, as you mentioned before, you work in slightly longer fiction or short stories, somewhere between poetry and short stories. You also have something prepared for us in that area. Would you mind to maybe tell us a little bit about your writing beyond poetry and then also share this piece with us?
Yeah. See, the interesting thing is that I moved from short stories to poetry and then I started writing prose, which was poetic. And it took me a long time to say this is the genre that I'm writing in, because there's a definite blur between the genres that I write in. So as a kind of sample, as it were, of one of the that cannot be called poetry and they can't be called prose. It's a sort of flash fiction, but what is known as flash fiction, which is basically short, very short fiction, microfiction. I'd like to read something that I wrote in Greek, just so you also get a feel for the Greek language, and then to read you the same story, or I'll read you part of it in Greek, and then I'll read you the whole of it in English, so you get a feel for this poetic prose. So this is the first paragraph of the piece of prose, and I'm going to read it in Greek, and then I'll read you the whole of it in English. Σε περίπτωση έκτακτης ανάγκης, σπάστε το γυαλί. Εάν έχετε παρατηρήσει ότι το ψάρι σας τρίβει τις πλευρές του σε μια σπασμωτική κίνηση στο υπόστρωμα, τα φυτά ή τη διακόσμηση στο ενίδριο, πρέπει να υπάρχει κάτι που το εκνευρίζει. Ο λόγος μπορεί να είναι ότι το παρακολουθείτε πίσω από το γυαλί, στερώντας του την ηρεμία του. Μπορεί να είναι η έντονη συζήτηση που μόλις είχατε με το σύζυγό σας. Μπορεί να είναι το χρώμα του τοίχου πίσω από τον ιδρύο. Το ψάρι σας είναι όμορφο και καταραμένο. Λάμπει στον αθόρυβο πάτο. προσπαθεί να σας μιλήσει κάτω από το νερό. Παρακολουθήστε τα χείλη του να κάνουν το σχήμα «ο, ο, ο». Διαβάστε τα χείλη του το «ο, ο, ο». Είναι η γραφή αγωνίας ή απλώς μια επανάληψη της πλήξης? Θα μπορούσε να είναι η γλώσσα του εκνευρισμού, ο κύκλος της μονοτονίας. In case of emergency, break glass. If you've noticed your fish bashing or rubbing its sides in a jerky movement on the substrate, plants, or decor in the aquarium, there must be something irritating it. It could be you watching it through glass, depriving it of its privacy. It could be the high-pitched argument you've just had with your spouse. It could be the color of the wall behind the fish tank. Your fish is beautiful and damned. It shimmers in the soundless bottom. It tries to speak to you under the water. Watch its lips going, oh, oh, oh. Lip read its oh, oh, oh. Is it the cry of agony or simply a repetition of boredom? It could be the language of latent irritation, the cycle of monotony. Reflect also on the following. What would happen if a fish forgot how to swim? Isn't the shape of a fish's backbone the very image of two opposing arguments bristling? Is the one constantly open, all-seeing eye of a fish a sign of madness? Consider these questions as they knock on each side of your head, first right temple, then left temple, then both temples together, loud insomniac knocks, as you pathetically, pointlessly try to fall asleep with your spouse sprawled all over the bed, in fact taking up three quarters of the double bed, going heavily under, under that elusive place of exotic, erotic dreams. The fish with the moon face, round mouth, open eye, never sleeps. It is already morning, and a stark orange light stares at you. Oh, the sun, the day breaks. Your spouse, more lies. Your lover, another day. Oh, oh, oh.
Thank you so much for reading those. Is there anything that you'd like to share about the work or maybe the inspiration behind it or some particular meaning that you were trying to get across when you were writing this?
To be honest with you, I can't remember how this story started or how this prose poem took off. I think I was thinking of insomnia, and then I was trying to write something which would create that whole feeling of not being able to sleep and thinking. And then I thought about fish going round and round in circles in an aquarium and with their mouths opening, closing with the oh, oh, oh. And it was like this repetition, the imagery of and the sounds of repetition and monotony and a marriage that is not going so well and this feeling of being trapped in an aquarium. I think all of these things played a part, and it came out, as I said before, it's neither a story nor a poem, it's something in between. But I like it. I think that was probably the first time I read it in public or out loud to an audience. Yeah, it's interesting how it works.
Yeah, it feels very effective, that kind of mix of poetry, prose. It's fascinating. I know that you had another piece prepared for us, I believe, or an excerpt. Would you mind maybe introducing us to that a bit and sharing that with us?
Yes. Now, what comes next is a short story called Lydra Street, which is set in Cyprus. And it's one of my earliest short stories and one which is very close to my heart. It was one of the winners of the Commonwealth Short Story Competition a few number of years ago, actually, quite a couple of decades ago. And I believe it speaks of the whole tragedy of the division of Cyprus in very few words. And it's so authentic that I've often been asked if it's autobiographical. And the short answer to that, it is and it isn't. And I just want to quote something from Grace Paley, which I really love this quote. And she said, "You write from what you know, but you write into what you don't know." And I think that kind of sums up this whole thing of whether you're writing as yourself or did you enter somebody else's territory. And there are, of course, autobiographical elements in this story, and it's definitely set in Cyprus, but it's not completely true. Although it feels very true to my heart, and as I said, it sounds very authentic. Lydra Street. I would like to tell you about the Gaphenion, about the cat that lived there, and the cheese rinds I fed it, about the coffee shop owner who was hit by a car, and the tray and glasses and the coffee which flew. These are the less important things. More importantly, there was a time Lydra Street was a whole, non-pedestrianized, and we still called Turkish coffee Turkish. But that was a long time ago. I can find the spot even now where the coffee shop owner tried to cross and the car hit him and the glass and the cups and the coffee flew. He died in hospital later. The tires screeched, the men gathered round, and my father ran out of his shop with a pick measure in his hand to see if it was me. Panic written in his eyes and a pick measure in his hands, as if to measure the life or death left in the body on the tarmac. I read panic again in my father's eyes one hot July day, the day I grew up, the day my memory was divided into important and less important things. Today I walked on Lydra Street and counted the steps from where the Gaphenion stood all the way to the checkpoint. It was 52 steps. 52 steps to freedom, 52 steps to captivity. I can only imagine the other side. My father's shop hidden in a souk, labyrinths of spices, hands dripping gold, a tree of idleness, belabais, la belle paix. When the Hodja's voice clings to the clammy summer evenings, I try to imagine his face and weigh the importance of his syllables. What is he asking God? And how carefully is God listening? I secretly mourned the coffee shop owner's death for years. It was my fault he died. "Don't feed it on the table," he would say. "Not on the table. A cat has 9, I have only 1. If anyone comes in and finds a cat on the table in my kitchen, I will not have any custom. I will not have a life." And the day he lost his life, he made 3 coffees on the pale blue flame. The bubbles of the coffee rose and subsided in the briquet. He lined up the little cups, filled them, picked up the aluminium tray, that special swaying pyramid of a tray, and left his shop, the cat, and me. It was my fault. I would like to say this to the sky in the evening, like the Hodja. It was my fault. But somehow it doesn't seem important anymore. It sounds silly even. I'd been feeding the cat on the table when I thought I heard a noise. I took the cat and threw it on the floor. Frightened, it ran into the street and got tangled in his feet. The brakes screeched too late. So he died because of me. And a stupid cat. It was in the paper the next day. My father made his lips small enough to pull in the coffee from the little cup and read, possibly to himself, possibly to my mother. Andreas Dimitriou, 41, killed by driver on Lidra Street. My mother said, and his wife? And his children? Don't they ever write about those that are left behind? I am now the one left behind, behind a wall, behind a checkpoint, looking for my father's shop, looking for my childhood, dismissing a man's death, mourning the division of a city, counting the steps to the other side, wondering where unimportance ends and importance begins.
Wow, thank you for reading that. I suppose just as a question, as we talked a little bit about your form of writing and the different styles you use, do you find that when you begin your writing process, you have in mind maybe whether you want it to become a short story or a poem? Or, for example, with Leisure Street, did it begin with an idea and then you just found yourself writing a short story?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked this question. I sometimes feel that my work definitely blurs the genres, as I said to you earlier on. So it's neither one nor the other. And I rarely actually set out to write a short story or a poem, but rather I let the atmosphere take over without placing too much emphasis on the plot. It sometimes ends up as a poem, sometimes as a piece of flash fiction or part of a longer short story. What is important to me is that the writing should somehow shift the reader's heart and resonate in some way, irrespective of its form. Now, in answer to your question about Lidra Street, as I said to you earlier on, I wrote that story many years ago at a time when I had first moved to Nicosia, because I come from Limassol, which is a coastal city in Cyprus. And when I'd moved to Nicosia, here you are at the heart of the Cyprus problem, because here really you feel the division of the island, because the city itself is divided, and this street that I wrote about is divided. Here, for the first time in my life, I suppose, I felt deeply this gash across the island, and I felt the trauma of living in this divided city. And yeah, the idea literally came to me as I was walking on Lidra Street all those years ago. And at the time, you literally came to a point where you could no longer, we could not cross over to the north of Cyprus in those days. Now you can. In those days, you really felt that you were in half a city when you were looking across the divide, as it were, across to the other side. And actually, I didn't know what was going on in that other side, because I was very young when the island was divided. And yeah, this is how this specific story came out in this way. But I could be inspired by a number of things. It could be a conversation that I overhear. It could be an image that I see. It could be really, as long as it touches me, then it comes out as something that will touch others too.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, it's great to see that you draw inspiration from such a variety of places in your daily life. I really appreciate you sharing your work with us. I'd like to ask, though, do you have any current projects on your plate, or is there anything coming up in the near future for you? What's next?
Yeah, I'm currently working on a novella, which is set in Cyprus. I won't say much about it because it's still in its early stages, although I have written a substantial amount, so hopefully it will come to its completion sometime before the end of this year. I also have a collection of poetry coming out in the UK, scheduled for publication in 2023. That's going to be published by Broken Sleep Books in the UK, and I'm completely thrilled that they accepted my manuscript, because it's all new work, and yeah, I'm very anxious and very impatient to see it out into the world.
Great. Congratulations on that. And we're definitely looking forward to seeing some of this work once it's published. Thank you so much again for joining us. It was a real pleasure. And I loved hearing your work and your inspirations. And we will definitely be looking forward to everything that you're doing in the future. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Armenian Cypriot author Noran Ajarian, and we've heard five pieces from her. Itswarpok, Although, When You Return to Ashtarak, In Case of Emergency Break Glass, and Lidra Street.
You've been listening to Bowery Poetry Speaks, an audio series of talks and performances with that special Bowery perspective. This series is executive produced by Traffica Europe Radio. Thanks for listening.